You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Pistons are 3-1 after beating the Knicks last night. It's a nice, encouraging three-game win streak after an opening loss to the Raptors. The Pistons have sort of settled in. I think more than that, they're just playing teams that aren't as good as them. I think the Raptors are better than the Detroit. So to win these games is encouraging, but it's also, I think, what should have been expected. Again, nothing wrong with that. It would have been discouraging to lose one, but the Pistons have done really nothing more than beat a few teams at home that I think they're better than. And that means only so much. But we have learned more about this team, and it's mostly encouraging. Marcus Morris, I don't know if I'd go as far to say outplayed, but helped the Pistons more last night than Carmelo Anthony helped the Knicks. Marcus Morris took advantage of Carmelo Anthony's defense. He took him to the rim. He found space outside to get his jumper off, and he defended Carmelo Anthony decently. This isn't really a fair fight. Marcus Morris had the luxury of picking his spots more, especially because Tobias Harris was also scoring well against a lackluster Knicks defense, and the Pistons had plenty of players to throw at Carmelo Anthony, from somebody bigger like John Lord to smaller like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. A lot of guys had turns on Melo, and that just made it easier for Morris in those moments, but to win that matchup is definitely encouraging for the Pistons, and it speaks to the advantage of their balance, where Carmelo had to take a larger load, or at least felt he did, because the Knicks are still pretty disjointed, and I really think in the year 2016, just not that good, that a lot of their players are over the hill, but they're definitely still a little disjointed. The Pistons could take advantage there, and Marcus Morris did. The Pistons especially stepped up with their defense down the stretch, holding the Knicks scoreless for a long while late in the game to allow the Pistons to pull away. It's nice to see them hit that other gear. Their defense didn't always need to be that good. If you watch the game, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. There was a Joakim Noah jumper that, oh man, go look this up. Go find video. There's video of it everywhere. It was ugly in form, in result. It was an air ball that was way short. Just an ugly-looking form. And I know, like, as somebody who has a terrible form on their jumper, I know what it looks like. I'm not in the NBA. Joakim Noah is. And, yeah, this is, if we're going to talk Knicks for just 1 second, one of the problems with Joakim Noah is he has lost so much faith as a scorer. He's a good passer. He's a good defender. He's a good rebounder. But he's lost so much faith as a scorer that he passes up shots that he shouldn't. Maybe not that one. That one was a little far from the basket for him. But even ones in the paint, sometimes he'll pass up shots that he should, and that makes it harder for him. And this is going to do nothing to help his confidence. And you could tell he was a little bit tentative as he was shooting it. You never want to be second-guessing yourself as you're shooting it. But that's the little Knicks aside. Let's get back to the Pistons. One big thing I was looking for in this game was how Ish Smith and Beno Udre would defend Derrick Rose, and the results were not great. Derrick Rose did a nice job of attacking the rim, getting efficient shots. But when the rest of the Pistons' defense is working pretty well, that's okay. If there's like a single problem, and the Pistons did a good job of not really letting Derrick Rose turn those drives, if he wasn't scoring, and he often was, but he didn't do a good job of turning those drives into assists, into good ball movement regularly. So the Pistons did take that away. They basically, I don't know if they said, hey, Derrick Rose, if you can beat us, do it, because I don't think they were trying to give him that, but I think they weren't going to over-adjust to it, that, okay, Derrick Rose was beating them. They didn't want that to happen, but if that's what was happening, don't let the problem spread, and the Pistons did a pretty good job there. I think they're learning to defend with a couple point guards who are at their worst defensive liabilities, at their best barely so-so, and they haven't been at their best defensively much. And it's okay. Reggie Jackson will come back. He definitely has a higher defensive upside, and probably for, even though he's flawed on that end, he's probably just a better defender because of his size, because of his athleticism. So I think they'll be better with Reggie Jackson. In the meantime, it's encouraging the Pistons are learning how to defend with a weakness at point guard where guys can get screened off, where the opposing point guard is going to be coming downhill with some space a little more often than you would like. One other thing that I particularly wasn't watching for, but I think a lot of people were, there was a real excitement about Andre Drummond starting the year 8-for-16 on free throws. I was not among the excited. You can listen to yesterday's podcast to get a little bit more about that. But he went 1-for-6 from the line last night. He's now 9-of-22 for the season. Don't see a lot there to be excited about. His form looks okay at times, not okay at times. Basically, it's just what we've always seen. It's not the end of the world. He's a very good player overall. In spite of that, he's excellent on the glass, coming up, making progress as a defender. And we saw even more of it last night. A development I am very excited about is his off-the-dribble game. He's just facing up a little bit. It can be something like where he catches it on a pick and roll and isn't as deep as he wants, or in some different situations where just one or two dribbles to get a little closer to the basket, to get in a little better position, whether it's to set up a layup, or he's got a nice little baby hook shot that's coming together that he's using off the dribble or not. This is nice. This is him taking advantage of his speed. What we saw in last year, some of these back to the basket post-ups, those were no good. Those were not doing much for him. They were just, I wouldn't say quite wasted possessions, because the advantage to them was it kept him engaged. It kept him happy. And yeah, that matters. And, you know, fans might not love that, but sometimes you do just have to appease your star player. But they weren't really producing points. These are producing points and keeping him happy and keeping him engaged. It's a real exciting development. We're going to see more of where this team goes when they face the Nets tonight. The big concern is going to be Jeremy Lin attacking. Like we just talked about, the Pistons point guards are vulnerable to that. He's probably the Nets' best player at this point, depending on Brook Lopez's health and comfort in this style. Kenny Atkinson's offense is really built for Jeremy Lin, where Brook Lopez, another talented player, it just hasn't been an easy feel for him, and the Pistons' big should give Brook Lopez trouble. As long as it's Jeremy Lin sort of as a one-man team, if that's what the Nets are exploiting, I think the Pistons will be fine. The Nets are just overall not a good team. When Jeremy Lin is your best player, that's probably not the best sign. And then especially considering where the rest of this team is, young and just not a lot of talent in other spots. And even the talent players are just raw. So I do think the Pistons will be okay. They have not won on the road yet. I think that more has to do with the fact that they've only played one road game, and it was against a very good Raptors team. I don't think the Pistons are some flawed team that has trouble focusing on the road or anything like that, but it would be nice to get confirmation of that with a win over the Nets tonight. As we've discussed here, unsurprisingly, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope did not sign his contract extension before the deadline, the October 31st deadline. He'll become a restricted free agent next offseason. And as a new feature on the show, this will not be the last. We're going to run snippets from the Dunked On podcast. If you have not listened to it, I highly recommend it. If you have listened to it, I highly recommend listening to it more. It's by Nate Duncan. He's off and on with Danny LaRue. Very smart, nationally focused broadcast. We definitely appreciate you listening to Locked On Pistons for a very Pistons-specific talk on the team. But if you want perspective on what's going around the rest of the league, Dunked On is great. It's right up there, to me, in the top tier of national podcasts with Locked On NBA. Those two are my two go-tos, along with the Real GM podcast, which is run by Danny LaRue. I was actually just on the Real GM podcast the other day to talk about the contract extensions and non-extensions with Danny. And Danny and Nate on the Dunked On podcast went in depth more. And that included this conversation about Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
The one that most surprised me was KCP not getting done. Stan Van Gundy has wanted to lock guys up. He has been willing to overpay guys in those scenarios. They are not going to have any flexibility. They are going to be up against the luxury tax, which might have been a little bit of a concern here, but Tom Gores has supposedly said that he is willing to pay that. Where we ended up with KCP was 4 years and $90 million. With a trade kicker in the mock-off season, I thought that that was totally fair for him. He's probably one of those guys where Oladipo and Giannis really messed up the market for him. I think that I like him better than Oladipo. I think he's better defensively. I think he just fits in more ways because of what should hopefully be a shooting. He's a lot younger as well. Obviously, he hasn't shot the ball that well from a percentage basis, but he'll at least take him. He requires a closeout. He's got some gravity to him. You're not going to just leave him shooting the way you are some of these other guys. So I was surprised that they didn't get there, but I think some of the comps might have been what messed things up for him, because Giannis obviously is way better than him. And so if he was asking for something in the $90 million range and then Oladipo comes in at 84, now they're, you know, KCP was a much lower pick than him. There are probably still people who think that Oladipo is way better than him because he's just, you know, maybe more versatile, higher upside with the ball in his hands. So maybe that's what happened there. I still was surprised. I thought that one was going to get done. And Dan and I said so when we did that Pistons preview.
If his agent was shooting high, the problem with going really aggressively, while it did happen with DeMarcus Cousins, is that the risk calculus changes, because if a guy says, you know, I'm not going to accept any offer below X amount, we don't know that that happened, but it very well could have. Well, if it gets too high, then you go, well, what do we have to lose? I mean, KCP is a nice player. He's a talented defender. His jump shot, you know, it still isn't where we hope it will be. But I mean, there's a chance that he drops below that and that the market isn't super stout for him. And so, you know, the more you raise your demands, the easier it gets to just fall back on the idea of match rights. And while, you know, they didn't, from what I remember, Stan Van came in when Reggie Jackson was already a restricted free agent. But, you know, like that is a little bit different than doing it now when you don't know exactly what you have in a guy.
I generally agree with their assessment. So I'm just going to focus on the parts where I disagree. Again, generally agree. And you can hear their explanations for that. When we talked about KCP's extension and the one Victor Oladipo signed yesterday, I said I'd slightly prefer Victor Oladipo to KCP, but I did not see it as a huge difference and would not have a big disagreement with anybody who felt otherwise. Okay, Nate feels otherwise. No big qualm there, but that's a small disagreement. Where I'm not quite as surprised as Nate that there was no extension, and that's for a couple reasons. One, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is represented by Rich Paul, LeBron's agent, Tristan Thompson's agent, Eric Bledsoe's agent, J.R. Smith's agent, and he's known, this is his strategy, is he waits out for the deal he wants. He does not rush to sign a compromise deal. He'll wait. And that strategy has worked very well for him. Not always, but usually it has. And so if KCP might be a max player next summer, no, it did not make sense for the Pistons to offer him the max now. So I think there was just the general guiding philosophy of Rich Paul is, okay, you wait and you play it out and you take that risk. And if that means waiting and sitting there with that qualifying offer out there, you just wait. So I'm not surprised in that regard. Here's the other reason I'm not surprised. Nate brought up a good point that Stan Van Gundy has a history of paying a little extra to lock up the players he wants. And I think he likes KCP. Like, I don't have much doubt about that, the way he talks about KCP, the way you can see KCP fitting. I do think Stan Van Gundy likes him and would be happy with him as the Pistons' shooting guard of the future. However, KCP is one of two players on the roster not chosen explicitly by Stan Van Gundy. And the fact that he's never even signed KCP to a contract really separates him from Andre Drummond somewhat. Because Andre Drummond did re-sign on a max contract that Stan Van Gundy negotiated. Quote, unquote, negotiated. Basically, it was, hey, Andre Drummond, please come back. We'll give you everything. Oh, by the way, you're a restricted free agent, so of course you are. I don't think this was much of a negotiation other than when Drummond would sign it. But KCP is different. Van Gundy inherited KCP. He was drafted by Joe Dumars. And while I think the fit is solid, there is a difference between having a player who you happen to have and are happy with and a player you went out and chose. And we don't know whether Stan Van Gundy would have drafted KCP. Might have, might not have. But he didn't. We know that Stan Van Gundy did not choose him. And so I do think that separates it from these some of these other cases where Stan Van Gundy identified a player he wants and went out and got him and paid what it took to get him, even if it was a little bit much. All right, that'll do it for today's Locked On Pistons. You can follow us on Audioboom or subscribe on iTunes. We'll be covering tomorrow what the Pistons did against the Nets tonight, looking ahead to the schedule toughening up a little bit. Hopefully that means the Pistons are 4-1 going into that stretch. I'd be surprised if they're not. But road games can be tricky, especially on a back-to-back. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.